Welcome to the Personal Financial Planning Section podcast, delivering insights from experts on tax, retirement, estate, risk management, investment planning, and practice management, designed to help you best serve your clients and take your practice to the next level. I'm your PFP section host, Sarah Bradley. Be sure to visit us at aicpa.org/PFP and stay tuned at the end of the episode for information on how to access valuable resources. And now over to our guest.
Thank you, Sarah. I'm Ted Sarensky, and I'm here to talk about how COVID-19 impacts Social Security decision-making. The trustees of the Social Security Trust Fund on April 22, 2020, came out with their report that they file each year. This year's report said that Social Security accumulations will run out in 2034, then be able to pay 76% of current benefits. The Disability Trust Fund will run out of money in 2065, then be able to pay 92%. Of the then benefits. Medicare will run out in just 6 years, 2026, and then be able to pay 90% of current benefits. Now, I tell you that from the standpoint that that's not much different than the year before's report, but next year's report could be significantly different with all these people unemployed and less earnings of so many people who still are employed that the collections of the Social Security system will be very much reduced in 2020, and likely will make these numbers run out even sooner. So if you're planning for folks who are not yet age 60, I would recommend that for Social Security benefits, you might want to consider using 75% of benefits rather than their projected benefits, because something will need to be done by the time those folks are going to start applying for Social Security benefits. Congress likely takes things up when it's imminent that something needs to be done. So I would expect that within the next 5 to 7 years, they're going to have to take a look at this, especially in the Medicare area. If they look at one area, they're going to look at all the areas. So again, planning for those 60 and under, think that you might have to do something prior to the time you'd like to do it in terms of reduced amount that you're projecting for them. What I want to focus on today, though, is how do you help your clients who've been affected by COVID-19? Not medically, I mean financially. 33 million people are filing for unemployment benefits right now, and millions more have been furloughed, are at reduced pay. Maybe they own a business. Their business is earning a lot less than it did before. They've been closed. They're not able to open yet. They're going to open. They're going to earn a lot less, even if they're involved in some of the programs that the government has put out there to help these small businesses. So many people, and likely a number of your clients, have less income coming in than they had before, yet the bills are still the same as before. So how can we get folks to maybe be able to start earlier than we would like them to start? You know, there's major turmoil. We need flexibility. You need flexibility to survive. So let's go through a few tips where how you could help your clients get benefits starting at 62 and how it might not hurt them as bad as it sounds, since everything we usually talk about is wait to age full retirement age. I've been talking about that for many, many years. Wait to age 70 to get the highest benefit possible, because the survivor of a couple gets to keep the higher of the two benefits. Very important. We've always talked about that. Don't start before full retirement age. Consider starting at age 70 if it's important that the survivor gets that higher of the two benefits. But sometimes choices are made for us. And a lot of people are, again, unemployed, lost their jobs. Maybe they're not going to be employed again. So you've got your client. They're age 62, lost his or her job. Here's a few ideas that you could use. So they start collecting at age 62 to make ends meet. They don't have the money coming in. But they do get reemployed. You can pay back whatever you've gotten within 1 year of the time you received your first check. So I'm at age 62. I apply for Social Security benefits. I get my first check on May 1st. I've got 1 year to pay everything back that I received in Social Security benefits, no interest, no penalty, and then start fresh sometime in the future as if I never started. So someone could start benefits at age 62, and let's say they're getting $1,000 a month. They get reemployed 6 months from now, and they're getting their full pay at that time. Great. They were lucky. They got their job back. They pay the $6,000 back to the Social Security Administration, the $1,000 a month they receive for the 6 months that they were unemployed and not earning anything, but they needed some money coming in. They pay it back, no interest, as if they never started. They apply again in the future at full retirement age, age 70, but they were able to start at 62 and able to make it work. Another idea is that you don't pay it back. You get reemployed. And let's use an example. Let's say my benefit was $1,500 a month. My full benefit was going to be $2,000 a month at full retirement age. But because I'm starting at age 62, it's a 25% discount. So 25% from 2,000 leaves me $1,500 a month benefit. So I'm collecting $18,000 in Social Security benefits in a whole year. Now, any earnings I have over the $18,240 limit, where I have to give back a dollar of Social Security benefits for every $2 I earn over that limit, that could come into play. In my example, if I earn $54,240, which is $36,000 more than the $18,240, I'd have to pay it all back. I received $18,000. I made $36,000 over the $18,240. I have to pay a dollar for every two I earned over that. I've got to pay my whole $18,000 back. I don't pay it back. In effect, what they do is they don't give me any more Social Security benefits until it's paid back. But what happens? I get credit for that back when I turn full retirement age as if I didn't start at 62. It's as if I started at age 63 because I paid everything back that I received at age 62. So in that example, it's as if I didn't start at 62. What if, though, I don't reach that full limit? What if instead of 54,240, I only made 30,000? So 30,000 minus the 18,240, and I'll skip the 240 to make the math easy. So $12,000. So 12,000 of my 18 gets paid back. It's as if that's what, two thirds, if you will. So two thirds of the year I had to pay back. I get that credit back when I turn full retirement age. So as if I started at 62 and 8 months rather than 62. So I'm getting credit back for what I have to pay back in Social Security benefits. If you want to do a formula for that, you basically say, two times my benefit. So if I'm getting $1,000 a month benefit, which is $12,000 for the year, two times that's $24,000. $24,000 plus my $18,240 gives me $42,240. So in the example of $1,000 a month, if I make $42,240, that's $24,000 more than the $18,240, and I have to give back my $1,000 a month, the whole amount, $12,000 for the year. So that whole amount gets paid back through credits, if you will, but I get credit for that back at age 66, full retirement age currently. You want to use a formula, basically take two times the Social Security benefit that person's receiving, add $18,240. If they make that number or higher, they're paying everything back. Chances are they're not going to be able to earn that much in a year where who knows when people might get reemployed. But in my example just now of $1,000 a month, let's say I earn something like I said before, the $1,000 a month, and now I'm paying back two-thirds. I get credit for that two-thirds. It's still better than the fact that I was able to start at 62, get some money in the door. It's still better than not being able to pay my bills. So while it's not the best situation, it's not a horrible situation either. The other item with that is that what you can do at full retirement age is you can suspend your benefits. You can say at full retirement age or anywhere between full retirement age and age 70, you can say, I want to suspend my benefits. You will earn 8% a year from that point forward on your suspended benefit. So in my example where I was getting $2,000 at full retirement age, and I started with a $1,500 benefit at age 62, and let's say I had to pay some of it back. So my benefit maybe at full retirement age is now $1,800 instead of $2,000. I suspend my benefits. I'm going to get 8% a year on that $1,800. I get credit back for all the times I had to pay back because I earned too much. So my current benefit's $1,800. It's not the $2,000 that I would have gotten, but I can suspend my benefits and the 8% grows on that 1800 until age 70. So if I got reemployed and that's 4 years from now, and hopefully the COVID-19 is a far memory for everyone, and I'm earning money and I feel good about my job and I keep working and I say suspend my benefits so I can earn those 8% a year credits. So again, we do what we need to do today to survive, but it's not a total disaster because we can make up some of those things by getting back to work next year or later this year or even the year after and paying some of those benefits back if I'm still collecting them. You can't suspend benefits until your full retirement age. So if I got reemployed, I can't say, well, suspend my benefits if I'm age 63 or 64. You have to continue getting them. Good thing if you're paying them all back because you're going to get credit for that. So that's one way to take a look at it, is that we do what we need to do to survive today, but there's ways to enhance our benefit as we go forward if we get reemployed and we have to pay some of that back to Social Security. Another for a couple is that you have the lower earning person start at age 62. Potentially, they're earning less money, so they're not paying back as much. Maybe they're closer to the 18,240. Maybe they're only at 25 or 30,000, so they're not paying everything back. So you get some extra benefits of collecting Social Security benefits along with the pay they are receiving, that lower paid person, and you're able to keep the higher paid person of that couple earning the extra credit through full retirement age, through age 70, and the couple keeping the higher of the two. So in a couple situation, being able to say, let's have that lower earning person at age 62 start that benefit, and the higher earning person wait. Again, a little extra money today could go a long way. I'm going to give you an example of something that happened to my sister during the Great Recession, 2007, 8, and 9. Which was a similar time, if you will, to people being laid off and unemployed and of an age that it was going to affect them. So here's my sister. She's age 62 in 2008, and she was a legal secretary for a law firm. The law firm was having some difficulty with the kind of law they did. All the attorneys that were partners in the law firm decided to go their separate ways, joining larger firms, retiring, for whatever reason. They were disbanding the partnership. They didn't take any of their legal secretaries, any of their support staff. They just went off on their way. So all these people became unemployed. So there was my sister at age 62, unemployed, looking for work. At that time, unemployment was around 10%. And age discrimination is out there, folks. People are going to less likely hire a 62-year-old compared to someone younger than that, because there's more work years available with a younger person, and likely the younger person's earning less than my sister was at age 62, having been a legal secretary for a long period of time. So her husband had died about a decade prior to that. So she could claim survivor benefits on her deceased spouse's work record. She could then let her own work record continue on untouched until age 70, which a couple of years ago, she just made the change and changed to her own benefit, which was then higher than the survivor benefit because she had started the survivor benefit early. Survivor benefits have the same discount as if you're discounting your own benefit. But she was able to get Social Security benefits. A widow, widower can get Social Security survivor benefits as early as age 60, assuming they have no children under age 16 at that time. So if she was age 60 at the time, she could have started at 71.5% of the full benefit that my deceased brother-in-law would have received at full retirement age. But she started at 62. She had a 25% cut. So she starts with 75% of her deceased spouse's work record at that point in time, took that all the way to age 70, switched her own at age 70. So if you know your client's history, you know they've been married 10 years, you know that they've got a deceased spouse. As long as they didn't remarry before age 60, this is available to them. So if you know your client's history or if it's a new client, ask them. They're single. Were you at one time married? Is your ex-spouse still living? An ex-spouse is still living, not available. But if the ex-spouse has died, this is available to somebody and a way to possibly get some income coming in when they've been laid off, they're furloughed, or whatever the case might be. Again, you don't want to start at 62, but sometimes you have to make ends meet. Another more extreme example I would like to give you is that grandchildren living with grandparents for at least a year, where the grandparents can show that they provided more than half their support, the grandchildren can get Social Security benefits based on the grandparents' Social Security benefit, the higher of the two grandparents' Social Security benefits. So an extreme example, and maybe this is for your business owners that are starting fresh, that it's going to be a long struggle for them to reopen their business. They're going to have low earnings for a long time. They could start Social Security benefits. Their earnings are going to be less than $18,240. But maybe it's a family thing where they say to their parents, the grandparents of their children, hey, Mom and Dad, can you help me out? If my children live with you for at least a year, they can get a Social Security benefit based on your Social Security benefits. They use your figures to determine what my children would get. Those benefits could really help us. Those benefits could be, that's our savings for the college that we're going to have to forego for now because we're not earning enough. That could be supplemental income for us, even though it's the kids' money that they're getting. Maybe it's able to help us through a hard time with some extra money coming in from Social Security. Now, again, this is a little more of an extreme example where the grandparents are taking care of the grandkids for at least a year. Then the grandkids receive a Social Security benefit based on the grandparents' Social Security benefits that they are currently receiving. What I wanted to do was just share some of these things. I know it is a hard time, but it's a way to maybe give your clients a little comfort in a time when, again, you've talked to them many times over about not starting Social Security benefits early, especially if they're working. But sometimes we have to do what we need to do to survive. Plans change. In extreme times like this, we have to think of other ways we can help that gives some assurance to our clients that we're thinking about them, that we're working towards helping them live the best possible life they can. Our retirement plans are changing across the board for many, many of our clients. This is a way you can give them a little assistance with Social Security, as opposed to what I'm still reading out there is wait to age 66, 70 and use your 401k plan or use some other funds, but don't start Social Security early. Hopefully I've given you a few examples that allow you to do that without destroying someone's future. Because in my opinion, your 401k plan, your pension, those types of pensions can be inherited by your children. Your Social Security can't. So that's why I would consider going to Social Security first before I consider going to my 401k, which is what I'm reading out there today. So in closing, on behalf of the PFP section, it's been Ted Sarensky, and I hope you enjoyed this podcast. I highly encourage you to visit the PFP section website to find the guide I wrote on Social Security planning and other resources to help you through the COVID-19 pandemic. Stay tuned for Sarah Bradley, who will tell you how to find these valuable resources. Thank you for listening.
And thank you for sharing with our community of listeners. Want more information, resources, tools, and guidance on technical and practice management topics? Visit aicpa.org/PFP and check out the show notes for this episode as well. So if you're not already a member, think about joining the PFP section, which is designed to save you time, help you best serve your clients, and take your financial planning practice to the next level. You'll gain access to a robust selection of high-quality technical and practice management resources like guides, 24/7 access to an online learning library, client communication and education tools, up to 8 hours of free CPE, and more. Don't forget to leave us a review so we can continue bringing valuable and relevant content. And subscribe to our podcast channel so you don't miss an episode. Thanks for listening, and I look forward to next time.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the AICPA or AICPA.org. It is provided with the understanding that the AICPA and AICPA.org are not engaged in offering legal, accounting, or other professional service. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The AICPA and AICPA.org make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to, and assume no responsibility for, the content or application of the material contained herein, and especially disclaim all liability for any damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.